Welcome to episode 99 of the Movie Brats podcast. I am Carter, and joining me, as always, is Jonathan. How are you doing, Jonathan?
I'm having a gay old time because what are we going to talk about today, Carter?
We're going to talk about three queer films released in the last couple months in the United States. So, a very gay day for us all, waving our rainbow flags. Two of them very much crime films, the other one smaller stakes, but big stakes in its own way. The first movie we will be talking about is Love Lies Bleeding, directed by Rose Glass, who previously directed Saint Maud. It stars Kristen Stewart, Katie O'Brien, and Ed Harris. It is set in 1989 as a gym manager falls in love with a bodybuilder drifter who is on her way to Las Vegas for a competition. Things begin to spiral out of control after a violent incident, which leads to a larger criminal conspiracy involving the gym manager's father. It originally premiered January 20th at the Sundance Film Festival and was released wide in the U.S. March 8th, 2024. It has a Metacritic score of 76 and a Rotten Tomatoes score of 93. I saw this a week ago today, and I absolutely love this movie. It kind of wears its influences on its sleeve. I think Wild at Heart you could definitely see as an influence. Also, Blood Simple, the Coen brothers' first movie, I would very much mark as an influence for this. Jonathan, do you think this builds up to more than just a sort of catalog of its influences, or do you think it falls short of those other movies?
Well, it's a film that on paper, if you took away the specifics of the characters like sexuality and gender, it's something that could be done, you know, back in the 1940s almost. Mm-hmm. But it has this real cool blend of film history, film influences going back to the film noir era. It feels like in a lot of ways an old school, like really satisfying crime thriller film noir. But then it has these really fresh, new, there's a new perspective. You know, you have these two lesbian characters, and it also feels just really alive.
Yes.
Sometimes you have these films that are crime thrillers that just feel like, yeah, we've seen this before, but this one is, I've seen it some places called a horror film, and I don't really think it is a horror film. It gets weird, and there's some kind of
magical realist elements.
Yes,
I think you'd say.
I don't think this is really a spoiler, but I have a theory that the character Jackie is an alien. Maybe there's like kind of these allusions, references, like
her not being of this world.
I know, it's like Kristen Stewart, you know, waves her hand in the air and says, "Where are you from?" And you know, the first shot you see her, you know, you see of the sky with the stars, and then she emerges and walks into the gym.
You might be onto something.
Yeah, I mean, I just very much enjoyed this film on a aesthetic level and just kind of a playing with a genre. And I do think that, you know, it's funny, I never saw any of the Twilight films. Did you ever see any of them?
I saw the first one. Yeah.
Okay. So, but like, I used to kind of poo-poo them, and I shouldn't have because I never actually saw any of them. I used to say things like, I thought vampires sucked blood, not cock. You know, I remember hearing that, you know. But I can make that joke. You can't. I think that both Robert Pattinson and Kristen Stewart have had, like, they really are two of the best actors of their generation. Like,
yes,
they make really interesting choices and work with really cool directors. I mean, there was about 12-month period a while back where Kristen Stewart was in films by Kelly Reichardt, Ang Lee, Olivia Sassis, and Woody Allen. And like one 12-month period, and she's gone on to work with David Cronenberg and Pablo Larraín, and you know, has gotten an Oscar nomination. So Kristen Stewart, it's like she has a film, I'm intrigued, you know, mm-hmm. what she's gonna do. And I love the fact that she said in the press recently that doing a Marvel movie sounds fucking horrible. And she said the only way she'd do it is if like Greta Gerwig directed it. Yeah, this movie just is very enjoyable on the surface genre levels, but there's also, I had my film professor hat on, so I think that's a film full of vaginal and phallic symbols. There's all the these vaginal
A lot of guns.
yes, well, so the phallic, you have the guns, you have the syringe, and with the vaginal symbolism, you have the crater, you have the toilet at the beginning where she's sticking her hand down it, and kind of in a weird, perverse way connects to the scene where one of them gets fingered. It's like she's sticking her hand down the toilet at first. And I do think that there's this thing too about, men speaking or not speaking. And then, like, the one character doesn't, his jaw does not meet a very happy end.
No, that was one of the gnarliest scenes I've seen in quite some time. I know you're exposed to a little more on-screen violence than I am, so it might not be shocking for you, but this is a very violent movie, at least I think normal movie-going standards.
Yes, well, it's one of those where it's like, if you added up all the minutes of violence, it's not that
Yeah.
long, but when it happens, it's pretty impactful and it gets pretty
Jarring.
violent.
Yes.
Yeah. It's also one of those where in like real life with violence, it's
Very
like
sudden.
shocking and sudden, and it shows the consequences too. I mean, these basically all the characters in this film are morally dubious, but you see them having to clean up, bodies, and you could say also a phallic symbol is, bodies rolled up in carpets. Yeah, I mean, I said all these thoughts in my head. It just made me think of a bunch of things. Like, I don't know why I got this stuck in my head. Maybe because he died just about a year ago. But I want to know. I haven't seen it written anywhere, but I feel Ed Harris's character looks like really old, ancient Kenneth Anger. Is there some, like, did she have that in her head, like him being like balding, but with this really long hair that he does have
Nasty, yeah.
left? I know, and he looks almost like a crypt keeper, from what's that TV show, The Tales of the Crypt? He
Yeah,
just looks so weird.
he's like ghastly, otherworldly.
And I mean, Ed Harris is like one of the coolest actors, and it's always fun when some really seasoned actor will like do a gnarly genre movie with like
Yeah.
this woman's second feature film. Did you
Just
ever
be
see
an
Saint
awful villain.
Maud?
No, it looked slightly too intense for me.
Yeah,
It's with
it's
Morphett
a
Clark, right? It's the star of that one.
I don't know who was there. I know that it's a film that kind of got lost during the pandemic. I think it like
Yeah.
premiered at Sundance or something like in 2020, and then it kind of never got like it maybe got some theatrical release and like when no one was going to the movie theater, but I watched it on Blu-ray. I also just have to say this is amounts to nothing, but I just love, I don't know if it's even a real name, I just love the name Rose Glass. It's a great name
It is
for
a great
a
name.
direct. Yeah, I'm Facebook friends with another one I really like. Direct's documentary's name is Penny Lane. That sounds like a gangster's mall from a 1930s movie. Penny Lane and Rose Glass, they should co-direct a movie together.
It'd be a great
Yeah,
poster.
no, yeah, I mean, I think that I have seen criticism. I do kind of agree with this, that the movie is so strong and builds such a world that I think at the end it kind of just like continues to be a crime thriller, and the ending is not as satisfying as like the first like hour plus of the movie. It doesn't like
Yeah.
it, but
I
it
think that's
does
fair.
have a magical realism bit towards the end that's pretty special, I think.
Yes. And in that context, I think it does sort of reach not only copying its influences or just another crime thriller, it does offer something quite different. And
It reaches new heights, let's say.
let's say
Yeah.
that, yeah. A movie with a lot of really bad haircuts. I was
Is
very
it actually, well, it's one of those films. Does it ever say that it's set in like the 1980s or 90s, or do we just, it has the aesthetics?
I think we see some news on the TV that signals that that is the date, but yeah, the aesthetics very much indicate late 1980s.
I would say too, the film reminds me partially because of the lesbianism, is the Wachowskis' first film, Bound.
Oh, one I still have never seen.
Oh, it's so good. You really should see that.
Yeah.
But that's and it's interesting too. It's like a lot of the plot beats and kind of some of the basics of the film on paper are very familiar, like the plot points, but the setting this film and gym and bodybuilding culture is like so unique and interesting. And I really liked in the opening credits where there's these shots of people lifting big heavy weights and working with machines, and there's just this, even in those shots, there's this sense of dread and like, oh, someone's gonna like pull a muscle, or there's something bodily is not gonna be right. And like I said, it never really gets, I don't really think this is a horror film, but there are these bizarre moments of like almost like Lynchian moments of
Where you're questioning what's really happening. Like, is this just in their heads? Is this something that's actually happening in the real world? I was very impressed with Katie O'Brien, who plays the bodybuilder love interest of Kristen Stewart. I had never seen her in anything before. I think she's been in a few movies.
Well, she's been in like a bunch of Marvel, kind of. She was like
She
an
was in
Ant-Man,
Quantumania, yeah.
and she's been in The Mandalorian, and
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Yeah.
right. And she just really stands out in the film.
Yes. And like really goes toe to toe with Ed Harris and Kristen Stewart, who are like two of our finest working actors. This seems like a movie Kristen Stewart really got behind. I think it probably wouldn't have been financed at the level that it was without her involvement, which is always really nice to see big movie stars maybe not taking risks, but pushing their influence behind interesting material, which, as you mentioned before, Kristen Stewart very much selects interesting material. So yeah,
Can
really
I,
satisfying crime thriller for me.
yeah, I have to call out, make special note of someone who, like, I honestly think it maybe steals the film. The actress who plays Daisy, the,
Anna Baryshnikov.
yeah, she is great in the film.
Yes, she
She,
is.
she it's, she's just so pathetic, but, she seems like she mostly has a good heart, but there's just something so sad about her. It's like she's one of those people in a crime film and a thriller where you just know that, she's an important cog in the machine of the plot, but she just is like such a sad character. And
Yeah, just not a lucky person.
no, but I thought she was really good in the film. And it's also fun seeing someone like Dave Franco
Yeah,
play such a
a total
horrible.
scumbag. Yeah, one of the more scumbag characters I've seen in quite some time. There's a very funny scene where he like flips out because he can't use chopsticks. Very funny. I thought it was funny, but it leads to not good things. So yeah, a movie about bad people, but really fun, I think you could describe it, even though it's violent and pretty dark, and very, very satisfying entry into the genre. And yeah, like you said, it could have been like a film noir from the 40s, but because it has this sort of 1980s bodybuilding lesbian element to it, I had not really seen anything quite like this, despite it wearing its influences on its sleeve. So I like this movie very, very much. We will be going on to another crime movie involving lesbians that I did not quite like so much. It is Drive Away Dolls, directed by Ethan Coen. Is this the first movie he's ever directed solo?
Technically, it's his second. It's his first narrative feature. He directed a Jerry Lee Lewis documentary. It's total archival footage that premiered at Cannes in 2022 and has never been released
Oh.
yet anywhere. But this is his first feature narrative film that
Yes.
he directed on his own
And
without his
co-wrote
brother
with his
Joel.
wife, I believe.
Yes. Well, did you read about their personal life
Well,
in the
she
press of
was
it?
like a out lesbian, and he's just like, I'm okay with that. I'm gonna live with you anyway.
I don't quite get that, but
Neither do I.
happy for them.
Yeah. It stars Margaret Qualley and Geraldine Viswanathan. It is set in 1999 in Philadelphia as two friends end up in a sticky situation with the wrong people when they take the wrong car from a drive-away car service. It premiered wide in the US February 23rd, a Metacritic score of 56 and a Rotten Tomatoes score of 63. This was supposed to come out last fall, but was bumped because of the actor strike. So I had kind of been anticipating this for a while. Ethan Coen directing a movie on his own. I'm a big fan of Margaret Qualley. But just something about this, it just didn't work. There were parts of it that I liked. It was funny in some moments, But as like a crime thriller, I don't think it really worked at all. Are you as low on this one as I am, Jonathan?
Yeah, it's the worst film a Coen brother has directed,
Yeah,
and
I
I've
think
seen
that's
all of
fair.
them.
Yeah.
Now, it's not terrible.
No, it's not the worst movie I've ever seen.
Yeah, The Lady Killers is a little better, I think, but that's like the worst Coen brothers film. But certainly compared to The Tragedy of Macbeth, this
Yeah.
is, if you're
Joel
looking at
Cohen's
their.
solo effort, yeah.
I know. I just felt it was, yes, it's amusing here and there. I like that the actors are committing to their exaggerated comedic performances. But as the film goes along, and not that you ever go to a film like this same way as like The Big Lebowski for like actual plot or, but it's the film is so silly and slight. And by the end of the movie, it just felt so insignificant and it wasn't funny enough or tight enough comedically or cinematically. And there's just so many things that just felt so forced, whereas the best Coen Brothers films just so feel so assured in like
Yeah.
every decision. I mean, there are these really silly moments where they're doing stylistic things, like the camera's at a canted angle, and it just felt so forced and unfunny. And there's these weird, trippy segments, which I don't know if it's a spoiler, but let's just say a very famous pop star, young pop star, appears in it. Did you realize it was her?
Yes, I did. It kind of
Okay.
took me out of it a little bit. I was like,
And
ugh.
then, like, it's one of those things where you grow to realize what these trippy interludes are for, but it kind of doesn't add to the movie and it just feels
No.
out of place. It's like if this movie were more like The Long Goodbye, like 70s vibe, but like I understand that it set back closer to that time, those flashbacks, but like the film set, like 20, like in the late 90s,
Yeah.
so it's like I don't know, they just felt out of place. And I don't know, it's just the film just, it's not even 90 minutes long. That's one thing that's a plus about it. It's,
Yeah, right. It was over pretty quickly.
I know, it just felt, it wasn't funny enough. And it just felt, it's one of those things where you also just think of better, funnier Coen Brothers films. You think
Yeah.
of the zaniness of another crime film like Raising Arizona. You think of the shaggy dog-ness of something like The Big Lebowski. And you think, I mean, it's interesting seeing the, at least one of the Coen brothers doing kind of this, unabashedly sexual film where really none of the films they had done really had much sex in it. I mean,
No.
certainly language and violence, but they've never been particularly a film with a lot of sexuality. But yeah, it just, I don't know, like, I don't know, it just, the movie wasn't that funny. It wasn't that entertaining. It just kind of ended, and I was like,
Yeah.
and a part of it's because the Coen brothers are some of the, top five greatest seven filmmakers for me. And, it just felt so kind of insignificant.
Yeah. Yes, that insignificant is a good word to describe it. And I mean, they set up Colman Domingo as like a big bad guy that we're supposed to think is very intimidating and has a huge presence looming over the movie, and his character really doesn't go anywhere. There's like a sort of odd, not small role played by a major actor near the end that didn't really go anywhere. Maybe the best part about it was Joey Slotnick and CJ Wilson as a sort of pair of bumbling, workaday crime figures for this big bass of bat of Coleman Domingo, but their story really didn't go anywhere.
And it also felt like too reminiscent of, the Steve Buscemi and the other guy in
In
Fargo.
Fargo,
It's,
yeah.
I mean, one of them's more kind of a quiet type, and I don't know. And I also just feel like, I don't know, that just, and like, I don't, why is it a period piece? Like, it's like, I guess to make it more questionable, that people would have a problem with the sexuality,
Yes.
25 years ago. But
Difficult to locate people. Yeah.
I get that. But it's just, I don't know, I just, yeah,
It just
it
didn't come
hasn't.
together. Yeah. And the two lead actors are very committed, Margaret Qualley and Geraldine Viswanathan. And I really like both of them. And but I mean, probably my least favorite Margaret Qualley performance up to date. Her accent's really bizarre in this movie. Some of the jokes like don't really work. There's this big thing built around Henry James's The Europeans, and it's just like, did you just want to like put this in a movie? Like, what is the point of this?
Well, I think too that like Beanie Feldstein is just like she's
Attached onto the
grating.
movie.
Yeah, well, it's just grating, and like the opening, it doesn't. It's just really obnoxious with a big star. I mean, I don't think it gives a Pedro Pascal's in it, and it just that just felt it just tonally felt just
Uneven.
really, yeah, and just kind of big and dumb in the way that the Coen brothers are usually really smart and often and sometimes, you know, not that you go to a Coen brothers film like, you know, The Big Lebowski or Barton Fink, you know, Raising Arizona, even though those are stupid characters or uneducated characters, it's like they have this kind of poetry to their stupid language and dialogue. But in this film, it just felt like too forced. It just felt
It's
off.
the actors, were very committed, but the things they were saying, it just seemed so forced sometimes. And I know that these are really good actors, so it's just
And it
I don't
just,
want
I mean,
to,
we're.
but it seems like maybe one Coen brother needs the other one more than the other does.
Well, I think too that like there's just these like there's that great shot in Blood Simple where the camera is being pushed along the bar and there's a drunk patron and the camera lifts up and goes over the patron and goes back down. And like there's shots in this movie that just seem really self-conscious and it's just like, ooh, look, you know, there's like an overhead shot of one of the characters lying in a jail cell and like the you know, shot going through the rain into a car. And it just felt like it was showing off and it just wasn't cool enough for just like everything in this film felt slight or lacking. It wasn't as fun. Like, I don't mind, you know, a great filmmaker making a under 90-minute lesbian crime comedy, but like it should be funnier. It should be tighter. It should be more enjoyable for what it is. Like, it's
Or
fine
there
that he
should
made
be
this
more
movie.
tension or something like that. Like there wasn't
Yeah.
really any, I never really felt that the two lead characters were ever under that serious of a threat, even when they're like tied up and everyone has guns. Like
Well,
it's
I mean, it's like a movie like Bringing Up Baby is just like so absurd. Like every aspect, it's like it's a, you know, there's a leopard and it's just, it's so ridiculous. But that movie is like a textbook in that there's just such like comedic, obviously, but like dramatic tension about like what's going to happen, and there's just
Yeah.
such kind of relationship and emotional stakes, and
This just
it
didn't
just
have it.
the, no. So, you know, the worst film by one of the greatest living filmmakers is still more interesting. Like, I would rather watch this than like, you know, the Marvel and DC and Fast and Furious stuff, but it's certainly a disappointment.
Yes, because I did
I
have
would.
pretty high expectations for this. I'm not like high, but I was looking forward to it, and I
Yeah,
was
I
pretty
mean,
disappointed.
at least one of, you know, one or both of the Coen brothers have a film. It's like I said in one of the recent episodes when we did our most anticipated, I had already seen it by the time we finally recorded it, but it would have been like in my 11 through 20 most anticipated, certainly. But yeah, so I would say this is for like Coen brothers completist.
And maybe if you have nothing else to watch, put it on because it's pretty short.
Right. He is right now in production shooting his new film, another lesbian film starring Margaret Qualley. Although this one also has Chris Evans in it. Maybe it'll be
Really?
better.
Maybe. I will probably see that, even though I was disappointed by
Oh,
this
yeah.
one. Our next movie, slightly less coded queer, but it is by a queer filmmaker, and there are elements that sort of signal itself as being such. It is Problemista, directed by Julio Torres in his film debut. He also stars in the movie,
Yeah,
written and directed.
directed it, wrote it, produced it, stars in it. Also produced by Emma Stone.
Yes. Oh, I didn't realize that they were very good friends, but I saw an interview with them together where it seems like, yes, they are indeed very good
They did
friends.
an episode of the A24 podcast together promoting it.
Also starring Tilda Swinton, among maybe some other people would recognize if they were to see the movie. It is about an aspiring toy designer who finds himself in crisis when he is fired from his job overseeing a cryogenically frozen artist and must find another job or a visa sponsor in 30 days or else face deportation. He may have found his solution by becoming the personal assistant of the frozen artist's wife, played by Tilda Swinton. It premiered last year, March 14th, 2023, at South by Southwest, but was not released wide in the US until this past March. It has a Metacritic score of 71 and a Rotten Tomatoes score of 89. We have both seen this very recently. I didn't necessarily have any expectations going into this. I had seen the trailer and thought, oh, that could be fun. And I was really impressed by this movie. I thought it was very funny. I thought Julio Torres has a very unique sensibility to a sort of surrealist comedy, but also slightly dramatic. Tilda Swinton is as game as always. And overall, I quite like this movie. Jonathan, what were your thoughts on Problemista?
Yeah, I thought it was very funny and very inventive. And I mean, I think Tilda Swinton is one of the absolute top five greatest living actresses. And I just love how she's so game to, this guy has never done a feature film. And, he asked her and she said, absolutely. And she's just, giving a really committed comedic performance with, some dramatic undertones to it, but it's such a great comedic performance. I mean, I just she plays this kind of at a certain point in the film, literally monstrous art
Critic.
dealer. Well, she's in the art world, but really she's just because of her husband, her late husband. It's interesting. This is not the first film that has Tilda Swinton and RZA in it together.
What's the previous one?
I think they were both in Trainwreck. Am I mistaken
I
about
didn't, I
that?
never actually saw that, but I think
Yeah,
you're
that's a TV
right.
show.
She's the boss in Trainwreck, Tilda Swinton.
Yes, I may be incorrect about that. There may have been some other rapper that is in that movie. Yeah, I think it was actually another rapper that was in the movie. I don't know rap very well. It's like what's his name? Redman or something. But it's in
Redman, yes. Also a
yeah.
member of Wu-Tang Clan, which RZA started. So there you go. You're
Yes.
not totally off.
No, but it's interesting. Well, oh, well,
And
no,
I
they
think it was
were in a film
Method Man.
together. No. They're both in the Dead Don't Die, the Jim Jarmusch zombie film.
Ah, okay. So you
Yeah,
just
which,
right idea, wrong movie.
right, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I just thought this was a very funny movie, and I think that Julio Torres also gives, he there's this, he just it's like a great, it's a really fun comedic performance. Him just, the way he shuffles around and just the way he has to operate in this world. And it's such a you it's like a mix of like a Charlie Kaufman, Spike Jonze, also a little bit Wes Anderson, where like there's parts where they're like dealing with art, but also just like there'll be these weird stuff strewn out in the streets. Like and there's like it also reminds me in a way of Pedro Almodóvar, partially because of his ethnicity, but just the it seems like every bit of wallpaper and like piece of furniture has been very specifically picked.
Yes.
There's just there's a real attention to detail. It's also cool that it's narrated by Isabella Rossellini.
Yeah.
That's just he got her to narrate the film. And it's just it's so there's just this weird comic energy and like an original voice about it, where there's just we could say not only are all three films were doing queer films, but they're also kind of genre movies, because this is kind of sort of a science fiction movie in a
Yeah,
way.
I mean, it definitely becomes that at the end in a
Yeah,
turn that I didn't expect.
it's kind of in the way that like Eternal Sunshine is
Yes.
like a science fiction movie, where it's like once you take the basic premise that launches the film, it's it's not quite, probably it's not quite as surreal as that, but there's still these weird flights of fancy in the movie.
And
But
it's
yeah,
also a great New York movie, I thought. Sort of going back to like the traditional theme of, New York, if you can make it here, you can make it anywhere. And this person just has such a vision of what they want to do and never really ever thinks about making things more difficult for himself by how particular his vision is. That, yeah, it was a cool movie to see, and parts of New York shown in the movie that you don't necessarily always see, like Roosevelt Island and stuff like that. But yeah, Julio Torres, I think he was a writer for SNL for a very long time. I
did a
wasn't really.
TV show on HBO, like it was
That's
like Los
Los
Spookios or something.
Espookys. Yeah, Los
Yeah, something.
Espookys, which I never saw, but apparently it's very funny. So yeah, I'm really interested to see what he does moving forward because I really like this. I think he's got a very unique voice, and I mean, it's something you don't necessarily always think about, the sort of like immigrants plight in the US with visas and sponsors and all sort of things like that. So to make that such an important element of the plot, but attach this surrealistic comedy art world critique, kind of like toy business critique thing, it just had a mix max of all kind of different influences and stuff that had combined to something that was very unique and something I hadn't seen before, and I thought was very, very funny. Like, he wants to work for Hasbro, but his idea is he wants to make toys that show kids that the world isn't so great.
They're
Which,
almost like conceptual art pieces more than
yeah,
actual
basically.
toys. Slinky that won't go down the stairs ever. It
Yeah,
just goes back up.
that
Yeah, I
teaches
think.
kids that the journey can be difficult, things like that.
Right. Where it's like where Driveaway Dolls was just kind of so slack, and you never felt, even though that was an actual crime film and there was people with guns and there was, violence and people
People
get
get their
killed in
heads
the
cut
movie.
off. Yeah.
There's just like no, there's no real tension to that film. And in this film, even though it's just kind of, sci-fi, surreal film, because he's desperate to make money and to get someone to sponsor him for his visa, there is this kind of tension to the film. Like
Yeah, there are
you're
stakes. Yeah.
right. And I think that one of the things I remember when the Zucker people were talking about one reason their film Top Secret was not as successful as Airplane was that Top Secret really was like 90 minutes of just pure jokes and gags. And that, but with Airplane, like there was actually the basis of 0 Hour and the airport films of like, are they going to land the plane? There was like, even though it's totally absurd and silly, there is the
Potential,
clothesline of
yeah.
drama to hang that, there is some tension. So in Problemista, all the kind of craziness with his the art world and the ridiculousness of that, and also his toy designs and the surrealness, it's grounded by the emotion of the film, and also by his something that's very real, like someone's immigration status. So that makes the
Yeah.
film work.
And this idea that he's playing with, where his mom, who's an artist, they had this really great childhood, him as a child, his mother, where she wants to make the world very safe and interesting for him. And when he moves to New York City, things are very difficult. And the sort of tension of finding the world to be such a difficult place, and his mom wants to protect him and wants all good things for him, but it might not be realistic. I thought it was a really like sweet emotional core at the center of the movie. That I didn't necessarily expect.
Yeah,
So yeah.
I like the ending quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, I did too. I mean, I had no expectations for this. It was kind of just like, I've got some free time, I'm gonna go see a movie. And I really, really like this in a way that I didn't necessarily anticipate that I would. So yeah, a big, big fan
I
of
like,
Problemista.
yeah, and it has some, like Greta Lee from Past Lives
Yeah,
shows
it's a
up.
great scene. Like,
Yeah,
that
well, it's
was
really
hilarious.
funny that, yeah, and like I said, RZA plays the husband,
Who
and
paints eggs and no one understands the eggs.
right. Well, it's also just kind of interesting because the conceit that he's kind of, he's, what's the word?
Cryogenically
Cryogenically
frozen, yeah.
frozen, that like, and he paints eggs. There's some kind of symmetry to that. But yeah. No, I very much, this is one of the better comp. I mean, I've not seen that many films at all so far this year, but it's certainly one of the funniest films I've seen in a
Yes.
bit.
And it's one of those ones that, yeah, was shot in November 2021, but you don't see it till 2024. So, been in production or post-production or anticipated release for quite some time. Because I remember seeing previews for this a
Well,
while
it's
ago.
going to come. It had a release date in the fall of last year, but the strikes pushed it back. It
Similar to
premiered it.
Driveaway Dolls in that way.
Yes.
But yeah, so three interesting queer movies. I think Love Lies Bleeding was by far my favorite. I think that could possibly end up being one of my favorite movies of the year. We both had maybe not high hopes, but we were very much anticipating the release of Driveaway Dolls, because the Coen brother was making it, and our expectations were not met. And did you also not really had you like seen the trailer, I guess, was all you'd seen for Problemista, or had you even seen that?
I had seen the trailer before, but I didn't read much about it at all before seeing it.
Yeah.
And I had not seen any of his work except, well, I watched Saturday Night Live for many
But you can't like
seasons, so
pinpoint like, oh, Julio Torres wrote that one.
no.
Maybe looking back, I could identify it, but well, yeah, there we go. Any news notes or anything like that you want to touch on before we wrap up today, Jonathan?
No, I think that
Our
one
beloved
other.
Terrence Malick might have his movie coming out next year.
Yes, they announced that. Well, in like less than 2 weeks of the day we're recording this, they're going to release the lineup of the Cannes Film Festival, which will be in May.
Yes.
But they announced the lead actor who is in Son of Saul and plays Jesus in The Way of the Wind, said that it will be ready for Cannes 2025.
Yes.
Uh,
So
but
we've got
uh,
our. I'm counting
our
down the days.
one movie that we could have fit in this one, even though it's not a queer film, but it's a film about sexuality that is going to be premiering on Mubi really soon, is How to Have Sex, which is a film that premiered at the Cannes Film Festival last year and won the Un Certain Regard
Who set down
award.
Ligoff?
Yeah, and it was directed by the
Molly
woman
Manning
who was the
Walker.
cinematographer for Scrapper.
Yes, which I loved.
Yes, and that's going to be on Mubi, so maybe we can review that because that's actually one of the better reviewed films that technically got a theatrical release so far this year.
Yeah, well, there we go. So, yeah, three interesting movies, two that we liked very much, one that we did not like so much. So, thank you for listening, and we will be back with you next time.